sense of what's going through your mind in that situation with a man on and nobody out, down a run in the ninth?
Well, I'm surprised he didn't throw me a fastball. I mean, fastballs up are kind of my kryptonite, but he just hung a slider in there. I was trying to keep calm the whole time just because if I try to get big, you know, that's where I'm going to swing underneath and kind of miss it. But, you know, I stayed calm and just saw that slider up and just hit it.
Well, there you go. Davis Schneiders, two-run home run.
Yeah, I love that guy. Last night. I'm sure everybody knows what his weakness is. Just don't tell everybody. Like, you know, at least give the impression that, well, you know, maybe you got a chance on it. Like, he's basically saying he has no chance, but good for him. That's a big-time homer against a big-time closer.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, early days, et cetera, yada, yada. But, I mean, let's face it, after being no-hit and shut out through eight innings, seeing Davis Schneider hit a two-run bomb off of one of the game's elite closers. We talked about this on Blue Jays Talk. The funny thing to me is hearing Davis Schneider talk, it kind of presents that classic showdown between hitter and pitcher, because he's surprised that he didn't see a high fastball because that's his kryptonite. And what are the numbers off of Josh Hader's slider, which he hit?
Yeah, nobody ever hits it. I mean, they hit 100 off it last year.
They hit 100 off it last year, exactly.
Yeah,
they hit 100 off his slider last year. So, you know, you beat one of the game's best closers by hitting his best pitch.
Yeah, and
also, it was not, I'm sure Josh Hader would rather be located differently, but still, you won a game. You took one of the game's best closers yard on his signature pitch. You could tell by his reaction. You could tell by Josh Hader's reaction. Yeah. He couldn't believe that was
it. Yeah, too. And I think Davis sitting up, standing on the on-deck circle, watching him pitch around Turner to get to him. You know, it was a little bit of that sort of, I'll show you.
Mm-hmm.
But again, you sort of got it in the back of your mind that, am I really going to get my weakness, or do I stay within myself? Don't overswing. Don't try and force the ball in the air. You know, you just take your natural swing, try and get a ball down. When you get it, don't miss it. Good for him. Man, they needed that. Like, you know, John Schneider was trying everything he could try. Yeah, I'm not sure about the hit and runs with certain guys and parts of the order. You know, I think we sort of pushed that when – maybe this time of the year, it's a little hard to push that. But like the five-man infield, do you really have faith in the guys that you would want to put that on to actually succeed? Really?
I've got more. Well, put it this way.
No, yeah, that's funny you mentioned that.
Let me finish. I've got more faith in them doing that than anything else.
So you have faith in a guy like Kevin Kiermaier, who's 1-for-15 with 6 punch-outs.
And
Alejandro Kirk, who's 2-for-18, and IKF's 4-for-14. So, that's pretty good.
Okay.
Like, do you have faith in that? What you're trying to do is traffic, no matter where it's at, with George Springer or any of the other four guys coming behind
what do you
him.
Then?
You basically are praying that George Springer comes up with somebody on base.
So you've got
actually giving
you've got
him a chance.
The bottom third of the basically, you might as well not even send them up to the plate, is what you're saying.
No, that's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying sometimes it's what you're trying to do maybe is not always the best thing, right? It's when that guy comes up and trying to force sort of action in the game sometimes just doesn't always
so
work
you sit
out because
back
of how
and wait
guys,
for Kevin Kiermaier
well,
to hit
work?
A two-run home run.
Did it work?
No.
They won the game, didn't they? Who hit a homer? Like, it worked.
Yeah, Davis Schneider didn't put a hit and run on with Davis Schneider, did they?
Yeah.
I'm saying that.
You're asking the bottom of the order to do things right now at the beginning of the season probably that they're not capable of doing.
I
think that's the point.
All right. So they're basically, they're useless.
Well, useless is a strong word.
Well, what can you can't put a hit and run on with them early in the season. Can't put a hit and run on with him. Let me just finish. It's hard when you've got a lefty and he slides up. I get all that. I mean, I know Buck talked about that a lot. And I think Buck's point was,
why not?
Well, because you got nothing else going on. I mean, you're not getting anything. Nothing's happening. You're not stealing bases, obviously, because other than last night's game, you're not going to steal a base when you're winning 9-2 or when you're losing 10-0. You're not going to steal a base. But I think Buck's point was try to create something. And, you know, John Schneider, it's a perfect day to have John Schneider join us. He'll join us after that. We'll just ask him. I mean, I don't know what else you can expect from those guys. I mean, if you're not going to,
I mean, you got to remember, too, and I'm sure John's going to say this, they're six games in. You know, they got like 14 or 15 at-bats. Like, I get it that Kevin Kiermaier's 1-for-15 to start the season with six Ks. I get it. He's faced some pretty good pitching.
Oh.
And no, he hasn't faced good pitching. Valdez, you say, wasn't a good pitcher?
He's not facing elite pitching. Ronald Blanco, no-hitter. But Ronald Blanco's not an elite pitcher. They faced Zach Eflin, who wasn't very good. They haven't faced.
I mean, look the guy's still adding and subtracting, and you're trying to do different things to different parts of the field. I mean, Kevin Kiermaier came out and said, I'm gonna try and be a different Kevin Kiermaier.
Well, that's wrong. That's a stupid.
About getting paid, so no, it's not wrong to him.
Well, it's clearly the Kevin Kiermaier that the Jays need is the Kevin Kiermaier they had last year. That's why they signed him.
You know as well as anybody, you've covered this game long enough to know that if somebody gets slapped in the face because they didn't think they were doing something that somebody else wants to pay them for, they ain't going to do it no more.
I'll tell you this. With all due respect to Kevin Kiermaier, there's nobody giving him a 3 or 4 year contract at this point in his career.
He seemed to think differently. I'm sure not after this year, but he's looking to get paid next year, too. Right.
We'll also be joined by Dana Brown, the general manager of the Astros.
A good show, boy.
And Jeff Passan as well. Dana Brown, wow. I listened to his appearance on the morning show, one of the morning shows in Houston today. And if I had a dollar for every time he said it's too early to panic, I wouldn't be sitting here at this desk. I mean, you know, we're looking at the Jays. And I look at that game last night. You know, John Schneider, the five-man infield. We saw the Alejandro Kirk letting Kyle Tucker take base on the pop-up. We're sitting there going, oh, is this the way it's going to be all year for the Jays? How do you think Astros fans feel? They spent a bazillion dollars on the game's best closer, and their bullpens torched all their losses.
Yeah, the difference is, I don't want to state the obvious
and
here,
Alex Bregman ain't hitting worth a damn.
They've been in the World Series 4 out of the last 7 years. That's the difference.
That also raises expectations. And, you know, if you are the Astros, you're looking at Alex Bregman. He's not young anymore. Like, you're looking at some of these guys. The reason I'm saying that is that's the reaction in Houston right now. They just had a dude throw a no-hitter, and they're...
What have you done for me lately?
Not panicking.
Yeah.
But they got swept by the Yankees.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're supposed to be going to the World Series. So I'm saying both marketplaces.
It's funny how that works. Man.
Well, it is.
It is.
I got to ask you this. The Jays are 3-3 going into tonight's final game of this three-game series. They've been no hit.
Yep.
They've been outscored by 8 runs. Vladdy's got, what, 1 RBI?
Yep.
You just talked about Kirk, Kiermaier, and Varsho. You gave me these stats. A combined 5-for-50 with 16 Ks.
Yep.
I'm looking at this.
Springer's 3-for-22.
3-for-22.
They haven't stolen a base.
Right. But I'm looking at this.
They made six errors.
And how many double plays have they hit into?
Nine. Second most in baseball.
they're 3-3.
How?
I don't know. Like, honestly.
Yeah. I mean, you can say that.
And they won, and two of the games they won by just bludgeoning the other team, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they just...
They're very fortunate. I think that's the point we're trying to make here. Look, that's good.
It's good to be 3-3 at this point.
I think you got to hang your hat on the starting pitching. If you just looked at last night what Berríos did, he only had 5 whiffs in total. He had 1 whiff on the slurve.
Yeah.
The slurve was in the zone 22% of the time. He had 8 3-ball counts. With just those things that I just mentioned there, you're thinking to yourself, man, must have been really bad glove side, right? Glove side's a big deal for him. We said this yesterday before the game started, that front hip two-seamer, back door still in the strike with the two-seamer to a righty, the slurve that he can steal for a strike or eliminate a right-handed hitter, the changeups that he could throw glove side. For whatever reason, whether it's mechanics, whether he just didn't feel good, early on, they had figured that out. You could see, you go back and watch video. Petey was talking, that's Pete Walker, the pitching coach, was talking to Berríos and Kirky a lot more than normal between innings. Like, he was really chirping, and they were trying to figure out. That's why, throughout that entire start, you were seeing more arm side. That's his arm, that's into a righty, away to a lefty. That's more sinkers and more changeups arm side because the slurve's just not working. I just mentioned that. One whiff on the slurve. 22% is not real good.
You also made a point, though, about that on Blue Jays talk.
Absolutely. That gets back to sequencing. That
you yeah, and this was a great deal. Point. Essentially, now, your first reaction when you look at that and you go, well, the slurve must not have been that good. But it did accomplish one thing. It made it hard for them to reach the Crawford
boxes.
Yeah,
you got to throw it, right? You can't stop throwing
it. Exactly. But it also made it hard to reach the Crawford boxes in left field. And you say that's because Berríos did one thing particularly well, and that was?
Yeah, the sequencing. It's sort of like a left-handed hitter. You saw slurve down. You saw cutter up and in. You saw changeup down. Like sequencing because – glove side's not very good. We have no idea why that is. Sometimes you just show up and things just ain't working right. Yep. And you got it. We talk about the lineup. Why can't they make in-game adjustments? Well, the pitching staff does it. Mm-hmm. You could tell, like, just conversations, watching the game, seeing where the stuff was going, what he wasn't doing. The 8-3 ball counts is a ton for him. He's not he doesn't throw a bazillion. He can't overcome things like that.
How many strikeouts did he finish with? Two?
Yeah.
I think he had two strikeouts.
The swing and miss just wasn't there.
Yeah.
He needs to have glove side to get a lot of swing and miss and get called strikes and go deeper in games. But that in-game adjustment, and in him and Kirky, it's like the double play I think Pena hit into, and he turns around and points at Kirky. That's the arm side thing, right? You got to set it up with sequencing. Mm-hmm. It's like against a right-handed hitter. He'll go sinker in. He went change up in. He went slurve away. Like you're setting it up. Okay, if my slurve away glove side, that's his glove, that's away to a righty, is not working, I still have to show it to him. I can't stop throwing it. So how do I set it up and maybe get a wild swing on it or I take the sting out of the bat? I ain't obviously going to get a lot of swing and miss, so I need to take the sting out of the barrel, and you do that by crowding them. Crowd them with movement. You get some little weak ground balls to the pull side. You might get lefties out in front, the fanny out, and they're sort of just flipping at the ball and hitting the little weak ground ball, which is exactly what he got. That's what we talk about, adapting on the fly. That's exactly what happened, right? You notice something right away, it's not working. You got to pivot and go to something else, and that's exactly what he did. And you asked how they're 3-3.
Yeah.
That's exactly how they're 3-3.
That was, when people say that a game was a grind,
there it is.
That was a game.
That's well
said. That game was was definitely a grind. We didn't talk last night that much, and we should have, about the job Jimmy Garcia did and the way, again, John Schneider used his bullpen. Kudos to John Schneider for pulling the right moves with the bullpen. But Jimmy Garcia last night, I mean, that they don't win if he doesn't give them that in.
Yeah, it sure seems like that they want to use Jimmy in those big spots, right?
Yes,
there's lots of traffic on the bases. They feel, I think, more comfortable him getting a strikeout or a weak pop-up than they do Chad Green, right? They want to give Chad Green a clean inning and just sort of simplify to where he's at in the order and, how does his stuff play a little bit more up. That's the best breaking ball I've seen Jimmy have in a while. The where he can use it to both sides of the plate, right? He can backdoor it. He can backfoot it. He threw a couple of pretty good sliders, and he had a little extra gear on the heater. Yeah. You got the extra gear. You can locate it.
He seems to have had.
And he's very confident.
He seems to have had all spring. He seemed to have had that extra gear
very
all spring.
Very confident. The Blue Jays have had confidence in him. They bringing him back and just saying that you're a big part of this bullpen and we really need you. And I'm sure Petey's had conversations with him now because of who they don't have there to begin the season, and basically saying you're one of the guys. Like, go get him, right? We're going to bring you in just like we brought you in last night to get some big time outs, the two pop-ups and the K looking. I mean,
they also had Nate Pearson warming up alongside Chad Green last night.
Yeah, I mean,
I
don't know. I think the Chad Green, I know what they say about sort of the gloves are off and we're going to let him work through it. I think there's still some kid gloves there a little bit. Like, you got to be careful with how you use him, how much you use him, who you're using him to. And I think they feel somewhat confident with Pearson to sometimes get a big time out against the certain right person that's at the plate, and hopefully he's right-handed. And I think they do like the split finger that Nate Pearson's added. And he's still on a few more strike ones. He looks a little bit more confident. He's maintaining velocity, which is a big deal. Last couple of years, that dip in velocity was sort of all over the place. They like the way he maintains it. They need the two guys at the back end back as soon as possible. They need Alek Manoah back as soon as possible. Sounds like they're coming really soon. but just sort of to solidify that because of the way their lineup looks and the numbers we just mentioned here, they need to hurry because that's the way they're going to win baseball games. They need to play better defense. They got to run the bases the way they're supposed to run them and continue just to throw the baseball when they're supposed to throw it in the right way.
I mean, Houston helped them out, too, last
Absolutely.
Night. That was
baseball IQ kind of things, right? It's Altuve kicking the ball and
Then
getting picked off at third. You know, it sounds like they got a little something on Kirky.
It makes you think that they And then Myers stumbling.
He didn't stumble, he fell.
He did a belly flop.
Well, sometimes it gets Western, right? These games early in the season, they get Western. Dudes running all over the place.
They get Western.
Like, you know, just sort of.
They got Western?
Western.
I've never heard that before.
It's all over the place. You know, it's like.
I'm writing that down.
It's like you got to.
The games get Western.
You get picked off. You're kicking balls because your buddy's like 0 for 40 to start the season. You want to help him out a little bit.
Okay, now that. Yeah. Now, for those of you who are wondering what the hell Barker was saying, Barker sends me a text during the game and says, do you think that Altuve kicked the ball?
Sure looked to me like he did.
Do you think that he kicked the ball so that he gets his buddy, Alex Bregman, a hit?
Yeah, sure looked that way. I mean, the ball was right to the third base.
He was going
to
be out.
Oh, absolutely.
He was going to be out.
Hey, but struggling.
But
sure looked like he slowed down and kicked it. I mean, I'm sure he did.
You got to be a hell of a teammate to do that.
I'm buying him dinner.
You got to be the biggest, the greatest teammate of all time.
Because you know, early in the season, it's just one hit, right? It's that. Oh, I'm 0 for 3. Oh, I'm 1 for 4. There's a big difference.
It's almost
right?
like he had to slow down.
He did. It looked to me like he was slowing down.
Anyhow,
yeah. And then he got Western a little bit.
Got Western.
Schneider's in the outfield. You know, he's running around the Crawford box and. It's Western. And then you texting me going, why didn't they take him out of the game? Defense first. You know, and then he hits the homer. Yeah. Well, anyway. Yeah. Apologize to John.
No, I
don't
have to apologize.
Yeah.
Apologize.
You were doubting him.
Well, it was not a good play.
It's a tough play. Yeah, I mean, you act like they play there all the time.
They take fly balls there.
You can't do that. When the heart rate's going up and you just got no hit and you're still down and you don't play left field all the time at the big league level and you don't do it in that park all the time,
that's not the easiest play. There's no reason to be where he was because, it's either going to be in the seats, it's going to be 30 rows up, or it's going to miss that and go into the gap. I think you have to make that play. Sorry, I think you have to make that play.
Wow.
I mean,
what is the point?
What is he did? What is the point of standing at the corner?
He didn't stand at the corner.
He ran over like that. Why you go?
You don't play deep there because if it's hit over your head, it's a homer.
Go into the gap. By that point, you know that it's gone. Go into the gap, make the catch. Anyhow,
it wasn't in the gap.
Two run home run.
Around that little corner.
Well, that's what
and
I mean.
He bumped
not the gap.
The corner
but I mean,
when he went by,
next,
like,
I, but I mean,
you're,
next,
you're being
next
really hard
wall.
On him.
Get your ass in there and catch it against the wall.
Mr. Perfect.
Dalton Varsho makes that play.
Yeah.
You don't think
he does? Yeah, but he'll punch out.
Yeah,
it's like, that's
out.
The difference.
He makes that play, but he's not hitting the two-run home run.
I'm sorry, Dalton. I like Dalton.
I walked right into it. Yeah, indeed. Indeed, I did. So, two on it. Listen, it was a fun game. As I said, it's fun for the Blue Jays.
Won.
Yeah, I was going to say.
That's it.
If the Jays had lost that sucker.
It wouldn't be fun.
1-0. That would not have been. Would not have been much. Justin Turner.
Yeah, he's a good hitter. I think that's what you can say about him.
You always, and I talked to you about this yesterday, you always talked about watching how a guy finishes his swing.
Yep.
And Turner seems to me to be the classic guy. You watch the finish to his swing, and you know it. You know if the ball's been hit. Like you just watch the swing, and you know what's if it's gone, you know if it's an out, just by the way he finishes his swing.
Yep. He's a launch angle guy with bat speed. He's sort of like Schneider. Schneider is the same way. Back-to-back, they are both sort of the same kind of hitter. They are collision guys who are trying to get the ball in the air no matter what. And it's not the easiest thing to do. Give you an example. Watch the last couple of games with Vladdy's finish. It's sort of the two-handed lean back. I can't do it and still be against the microphone. It's the two-handed finish lean back. That will tell you something before that point is off.
Mm-hmm.
Not seeing the ball out of the hand. It's the pitch. The direction's not great. It's not landing in the right spot. Something's going on there to where the finish is not looking the way it's supposed to look. You look at Turner when it's raring and ready to go. You look at Schneider when it's supposed to be the right way, right? The finish is there. That's what the really good hitters do, is they get to the finish consistently. And Turner's a really good hitter. Like, they're asking a lot from him. I mean, it's rare that he's hitting the cleanup spot because of who he's been playing for the last 15 years. Mm-hmm. The Dodgers don't need him to hit cleanup. Mm-hmm. You know, he was getting on base for the guy hitting cleanup. And now they're asking him to do different things a lot of the times, which is a lot to ask. But he's a really good hitter. Like, he does a lot of good things. And he does a lot of good things to the pull side. With all of that stuff going on, it's not the easiest thing to do. It's really not.
Understanding that health and age are big factors for him. Why is it that when you watch him at the plate, you know, we talked about Kevin Kiermaier, for example, or there are other guys. You watch guys that are around 37, 38, 39, you go, I just don't know how much is left in the tank. I watch Justin Turner. I don't have that thought. And I mean, obviously I haven't seen him as much as,
yeah, he's 39,
you know, people
too.
Play with the Dodgers or the Red Sox. But I just don't have that thought. That's not going to say it could happen this year. But you don't get the impression it's going to happen. Is he just a guy, Kevin, who just knows his swing so well?
Yeah, I think there's something to that. I think it's
that he can make up for whatever physical, whatever slowing down or whatever.
I think it's the 80% of his swing. I think that's what you have to remember. Again, I hate to continue to bring Vladdy back into the picture here, but Vladdy looks like he swings 100% all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Does Turner look that way?
No.
No.
It looks easy.
I think that's what it is. I think if you rely a lot on your mechanics and where you're looking to hit the baseball, he ain't wanting to go the other way. You know, like, it's just not in his DNA at his age to consistently go the other way. He goes the other way, it's a mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Something was late and the barrel was in the wrong part, and the ball just goes over there. Most of the time, he wants to catch it out front and create loft and get it in the air to the pull side. I think it's the 80% of the swing. I think he's one of those guys that thinks, I have three swings. I have three strikes. Mm-hmm. I'm going to take advantage of all three of those. Can I have the same swing three times, four at-bats in a game? If I can do that because I'm really good, and I got an idea of my mechanics, and if it's connected from my feet to my hands, and if I catch it out front most of the time, the ball go where I want it to go. And it takes you forever to figure that out. Now, again, you know, he's had a lot of time
he's
to screw
forever.
Up, and he has. And he's been bad. I played with him in winter ball.
Right.
He wasn't real good. Like, he was in between the leg kick. He didn't really know who he was as a hitter, and he was trying to figure it out.
Well, I mean,
he got sent home from winter ball when I played with him because of that. He wasn't real good in winter ball. And then he went home and he figured out the leg kick. The leg kick's a big deal for him, right?
We had Ned Colletti on. Ned Colletti was a guy that basically helped save his career.
Yeah.
Brought him over to the Dodgers.
Give him credit, though. He's taking advantage of who he is, what he's trying to do, and he's not a fast guy. Right? You have to know that going to the plate. I'm not a fast guy. How do I be my best self? It ain't on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be in the air to the pull side. That's why I brought up David Schneider, is because he's sort of the same way. He's not the fastest of guys, and you're going to stay in the big leagues a long time if you get the ball in the air to the pull side. So, look, he ain't the issue. Now, the three guys after him, how do you take – and we're going to ask John, or I'm going to ask John this. 5 for 50 is worrisome. With 16
strikeouts,
that's a lot. Now, if Kirky hadn't had the four RBIs early in the season, I mean, you're thinking about now the Clements of the world and the Davis Schneiders of the world. I mean, even IKF right now is having better at bats than a couple of them guys. Like, it's right now performance driven. I know they're thinking defense, and you know Dalton Varsho is a lunch pail guy right now.
They have no choice with Kirk, obviously, right now.
Yeah, right. I mean, he's going to get some at bats because of the way he handles the pitching staff. He was one of the main reasons why Barrios got through that start last night. I mean, I know it's the sort of the way it looked when he flipped the ball to Meza and Tucker went to second, and you know the Astros got something on him by the way Altuve was coming down the line at third. I get that, but it's just, okay, if something's not working, can we adapt and overcome it and still give the team a chance to have the big inning? Kirky's a big deal for that. Just by where he sets up, how he calls sequencing is a giant deal. And I picked that up right away. Glove side is a big deal for Barrios. That's a giant deal. A lot of things are happening there to set up everything else and to get him longevity through a start. And then when you don't have it, now it's up to the catcher to simplify it and go, okay, we still got to throw the slurve because it's your best pitch. How do we get to it and make it relevant? Well, sequencing, arm side, throw more changeups, throw more two-seamers. It's where I set up. I don't want to throw that on the plate because you don't throw 99.
I guess.
I want to throw it in off the plate, let them chase it, take the sting out of the bat, and now we're talking about instead of coming out in the fifth inning, you come out in the seventh inning. I mean, it's brilliant. So,
I mean, I guess the thing with Kirk is
you get
if
what
you could
get.
Just stick him behind home plate, leave him in a squat and catch the ball and not have to do anything else, he'd be a great catcher. But he gets – I mean, he gets sloppy with other things.
Well, they're asking a lot, too, offensively, which is maybe not fair to him.
That's a fair point.
Yeah, yeah.
And in some ways, he's a victim of the success he had in his first season.
And what they didn't do in the offseason.
Correct. And what they didn't do in the offseason.
Yeah.
That is a very good point. But it's just he's frustrating to watch for a lot of people, I think, because, one, you want to cheer for the guy because of the story. And he seems like a decent dude. So you want to cheer for the guy. He is an elite receiver.
Yep.
You talked about the sequencing and all that, but it's the other aspects. There are just times where he looks sloppy and the game doesn't seem to be as clean when he's behind the plate as when Danny Jansen's behind the plate. I just don't. There always seems to be one thing where you come away going, God,
I think behind the everything with Danny works a little quicker. His movements.
That's a good way. Yeah,
he gets out of his crouch faster.
That's fair. Yep.
He calls the play that they want to throw faster. Like everything just
that's
is
fair.
A little quicker, and it's a little
sharper.
Easier to watch.
Yeah.
Kirky's very valuable to this team. Like,
oh, listen,
they speak very highly of him behind the plate.
I thought coming out of spring training, we were asked in Sportsnet.ca to, you know, keep an eye on. I thought Kirk was – I just liked what I saw in spring training. I bought into everything everybody said about him being stronger and all this, and he's had the full spring and, you know, and he reported in the best shape of his life and all this stuff.
Mm.
And I expected a good year from him. And frankly –
they're asking a lot on the offensive side. They are, and that's not his fault. I mean, it's not his fault they didn't do anything in the offseason.
It's
not his fault.
It's hard to ask him to be the third best hitter in the team.
Absolutely. It's a lot to ask.
It's a lot to ask. It sure is.
Dana
Brown is general manager of the Houston Astros. He was, of course, the Blue Jays special assistant to the GM from 2010 to 2018.
Sky's falling.
I caught Dana's appearance on the morning show, one of the morning shows in Houston today. Yeah, the sky is falling. The sky is falling in Houston. Dana Brown joins us. John Schneider, Jeff Passan, all ahead. It was a great lineup our producer Mark Boffo put together. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590, The Fan and Sportsnet.
Hey, it's Ben Ennis.
And I'm Brent Gunning.
We got you covered on all things Leafs, Raptors, and Blue Jays every weekday morning, 6 to 9.
It's The Fan Morning Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, and wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, welcome back to Blair and Barker. Reminder that Blair and Barker will also be doing Blue Jays talk tonight following the third game of the Jays-Astros series. The Jays have tomorrow off, an off day in New York.
What can go wrong? Oh,
I love off days. Off days in New York were tremendous.
Really?
Oh, my God, I loved off days in New York. And they start a three-game series in the Bronx. And then they're home for their home opener on Monday. The day of the solar eclipse, speaking of what can go wrong. let's bring in Dana Brown. He's general manager of Houston Astros, friend of the show, Blue Jays, special assistant to the GM from 2010 to 2018. Dana, thanks so much for joining Blair and Barker today. I have to admit, I caught you on the morning show in Houston this morning because sometimes I do stuff like that. We were just talking or talking here, I don't know, it might have been actually yesterday because I was listening to it online, but we were just talking here about the Jays are 3-3 and, you know, people are, the lineup isn't hitting, et cetera, et cetera. The Astros are 1-5. It's remarkable, isn't it, Dana? We say every year, don't overreact.
Good luck.
And every year we overreact.
Every year. So I have to keep reminding people that we play 162 games, and this is not like a football season where, you know, you're only playing a few games. So, you know, this is a grind, And it's a marathon, not a sprint. So I tell our people to stay positive. Good teams will play good baseball, and bad teams play bad baseball.
Yeah, and I would think the Astros' track record in recent years is
no question.
That would give me a fair amount of hope if I was a fan. Hey, Dana, last year was your first year as Astros GM. You were hired almost on the eve of spring training. Obviously, you've been there all spring. You've been there now for more than a year. How different was spring for you this year with a season under your belt in charge of this team? And when you look back at what you had to do last year, kind of learning on the fly, what did you learn about yourself last year?
Yeah, I learned that I've been in the baseball grind for a long time, and you cannot let this stuff get to you.
Mm-hmm.
You have to have the heartbeat and the stomach for it, for sure. I hit the ground running last year. And, guys, I got to tell you, the hardest thing about this job was just getting to know all the employees. I mean, there's a ton of people that you're responsible for. And so that was pretty difficult. And ultimately, that was like that big thing where I had to get the hurdle. Baseball, you know, the baseball decisions, I've been in baseball for 34 years. So I enjoy making baseball decisions. So I wasn't, you know, panicking about that. But we got off to a slow start, but I think we're going to be all right.
Dana, is there something that you look at when it comes to baseball IQ, like running into outs or kicking baseballs or getting picked off? You know, they're trying to steal second and fall, and I mean, that's everybody's going to, you know, make a mistake and fall occasionally. How do you, as a coaching staff, at least early in the season, attack things like that when it just comes to, you sort of need to clean those things up as a really good team? I know the Jays are going through that too when it comes to errors and throws and, you know, you can do that a little while, and then the little while's over, and now it's time to clean those things up.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, it's tough to watch when you don't do the little things right. You know, the things that don't require much talent, you have to get those things right, you know. Running the bases, making the right decisions, getting runners over, those kind of things. You just have to do right. In the course of 162, the team that does that the best is probably going to finish out on top. So you got to get those things right. And hopefully, you know, lesson learned for us, you know, last night, and we could shake it off and come back.
Dana, do you have to keep reminding yourself as well that when I look at your team, the starting pitching has been good. And you're going to get, you know, I believe you're getting Verlander back. You are getting Verlander back. Garcia, McCullers, they should be back at some point this year. Do you... When you're looking at where a team is and where it needs to go, and in the Astros' case, I think it's safe to say that where it needs to go is to get to the World Series. How do you kind of balance the not reacting too early to stuff with, I got to keep my eye on this long-term thing, and you know what? I'm getting some guys back, and when they come back, the trickle-down effect is going to it's going to stabilize everything.
You have to realize, look, there's 162 games. You're going to make mistakes. You're going to blow saves. You're going to make errors. There's a lot that happens in 162. So you have to keep reminding yourself that, look, you have a good starting rotation. Your bullpen is really good. You have the offense that it takes, and you can catch the baseball. You just have to be consistent with all of those things, and good things are going to happen. You hit a skid, and then you always remind yourself, look, we got a chance of running off 7 to 10 games in a row, so we can clear that up pretty quickly. And then, you just have to sit back and watch and manage the roster.
Dana, Valdez last night was throwing, at least what I saw, more sinkers that were running. That's more of a two-seamer. Now, last year it seemed like he was overthrowing the sinker a little bit too hard, and that would force it to run. Looks like the mechanics are a little bit better. You tell me, you would know more about this. But I just wonder, a guy that's been dominant with one pitch and now is struggling trying to find that pitch and sort of, you know, in big spots, want to eliminate people with your best pitch. How does he get that pitch back is my question.
Yeah, I knew it was going to be a good night for him when he threw that one pitch that was a little high and it took off and Caratini missed it. I was like, oh my, the ball is moving tonight.
Yep.
So if he gets his ball to move, that fastball takes off, you know, into that left-hander's batter's box. And then that slider he got goes down and into a righty. So, I mean, ultimately, if he's got the movement, he's going to be really tough that day. And the command was there last night. That's another good thing for him. So, I mean, it was a great bounce-back start. You know, he's been a trooper. He's a warrior. He posts over 200 innings multiple years. Ultimately, you know, Valdez is going to he'll be there for us. He's a pillar for sure.
Yeah.
In conversation with Dana Brown, general manager of the Houston Astros, a guy that both Barker and I spent a lot of time talking about in the postseason last year was Yainer Diaz. And you guys moved on from Martin Maldonado this offseason. I mean, gosh, he's part of the postseason furniture, the way a lot of those Yankees guys were when the Yankees were doing so well. What did you see in Yainer that made you go all in on him? I mean, obviously the offensive tools are there, but Maldonado just seemed to be such an important dude to the heartbeat of that team and all the stuff going on with that team. What did you see in Diaz that made you think, okay, this is our guy?
Yeah, I will say this. Maldonado really tutored him very well, and he had a whole year to be under Maldonado's care. And Maldonado was, you know, always in his in the information business of sharing with Diaz and training him. And so he was passing the baton to Diaz. And so we felt like Diaz was really picking it up. We know he could swing the bat. We know he has power. We know he's going to have a pretty good OPS. The one thing we were locked in on was, hey, is he getting the right teaching from Maldonado, and is it going to carry over? And it seems like he was really picking up a lot from Maldonado. And ultimately, you know, you saw him the other night. He called a really good game, you know, with Blanco pitching. And so he's picked up a lot of the good things that Maldonado had to offer him defensively. So he's in good position. He's in good position to be a pretty good player. And if he continues to catch well and throw guys out and hit the ball in the seats and drive the ball in the gaps, you know, he'll be an all-star catcher.
How important is it for the Astros organization, Dana, to kind of get that next core ready? You know, Springer left as a free agent. We talked about Maldonado. Altuve signed essentially what is going to be a lifetime contract. Of course, you know that there's decisions looming with Kyle Tucker and Alex Bregman. Look, this team's gone at least to the LCS 7 years in a row. Is it important to kind of get that next group together? You know, have a few guys at the major league level, but also start restocking the minor leagues a little bit at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so as you guys know, I've come out of the scouting background. Mm-hmm. So I've run the draft for many years. And I look at it this way. You always have to have a wave of players coming. And if that wave becomes a little bump, then that's going to be a problem. So you keep the wave coming, and then you keep the prospects rolling in. We have some tough decisions to make. You know, we have guys that we're going to try to renew. But we also have to have these guys coming behind them, you know, that, we could sustain the winning. And so, I mean, it's not easy to win at the big league level. And so, our owner, Jim Crane, he's very clear that our window is always open. So we want to keep the wave of players coming. You know, and that's by, you know, winning in the draft. And I'm already, you know, talking with my guys. I'll be out there seeing some players, you know, as it relates to the first round and talking to my amateur scouting staff to say, hey, look, let's get these picks right, because we're going to need that wave of players to continue this thing.
Yeah, one of the things the Astros have done well, not just with this roster, but in general, is it seems to me that this organization has always been able to identify older international free agents, very cost-effective when you sign them. I mean, I think Framber Valdez signed for like $10,000 or something like that at the age of 21. And then bring these guys into the organization, develop them, and boom, the next thing you know, they're contributing at the major league level. Now, I know that this year, the international signing period, a lot of teams kind of got screwed a little bit this year by what would you call it, finagling that was going on in the Dominican Republic. I think you guys had signed 9 international free agents. I think 3 of them ended up, the contracts were voided because of that. How important do you foresee the international signing being for this organization going forward?
Yeah, international signings are very important in every organization, to be honest with you. You have to go out there and you have to be in the grind, and it is a grind. And you can get players for $5,000 or $500,000 or $5 million, and they come from all levels, just like it is with the draft. I mean, you can get a senior sign and end up being an all-star, and you can get a first rounder and a 10th rounder. So, acquiring players by way of the draft or international signings, it's always important. You have to get those international guys out there. And we had here in Houston, Oz, Ocampo, mm-hmm. he did a good job here. And he had to kind of pass the baton to Brian Rogers, and Brian is off to a pretty good start. But ultimately, he had put some really good guys in the rotation for no money. I remember in the 2022 World Series, I was home watching, and they put that picture on the screen with Urquidy and Valdez and Garcia, and what they had signed for. Javier was in part of that, and it was unbelievable. I remember taking a screenshot of it. I was with Atlanta at the time with Alex Anthopoulos. I took a screenshot of it and sent it to him. I said, look, this is a hell of a job. And so they've done a good job here. We have some really good pitching people here. You see what our guys did with Blanco. Last year I decided to say, hey, let's see if we can get this guy in the rotation. They make him a starter. They give this guy a changeup. They teach him how to use that changeup effectively. And before you know it, he's off to a good start. So the combination of signing players in international and developing those players is going to be very important, not only for our organization, but for the game itself.
Dana, it sure seems like your guys are throwing more changeups. Now that you mentioned the changeup, I know Javier is mixing in some more changeup. The Jays are going to see that. Changeup's hard to hit. I would assume that's why you're taking the sting out of the bat. It gives the team a different look. Why the emphasis on the changeup this year?
Yeah, I think it depends on, which organization. But I think the whole key is you want to get guys off time, whether it's the changeup or the slow curveball that you drop in there as a get-me-over strike. The whole key to this thing is to get guys off time. These major league hitters are really good, and if they're on time, they're going to do damage. And so if you can get them off time, you got a chance of getting them out because they don't miss often when you go in that zone. So you have to keep them off time. And even if it's in the zone, if they're off time, you've got a chance of getting them out.
Yeah, it's a hard pitch to hit, too. I'm sure that's why they throw them a lot. Often a lot of people ask what makes a good manager in 2024, and I don't know all the time if we have the right answer for that. But with Joe Espada, I would think dealing with egos on a really, really good team is probably first and foremost with all the team, right? Presley moving to the eighth inning instead of being in the ninth inning, and then all the really good everyday players. How's he been handling egos so far?
Yeah, I think the most important thing for a manager is just to manage that clubhouse and to manage these players. And so Joe Espada has a really good feel for the players because he's been here for so long. And he's worked under some good managers. And so I think he's got big respect downstairs. That's number one. Joe could also run a bullpen. He's really good at making the lineup up. He could switch it around. So he's exactly what we were looking for in a manager. And the fact that he was in-house was great. But I think it's so important, though, that you have to have the respect and you have to have the presence to be in that clubhouse. And Joe, of course, has been here so long. He's got the respect of the players. And he knows how to manage that roster. So I expect big things from Joe. Good human being. Knows when to put his arm around the guys. Know when to give them a little kick. But ultimately, I think he was the right man for the job.
Dana, it's really good of you to join us today. We really appreciate your time, as always. Best of luck this season. And we'll check in with you when we see you in Toronto. Thanks, my friend.
Thanks
Be well.
A lot. Good luck.
Thanks. Thanks, guys. No problem. Canada has always been good to me, so I appreciate you guys.
Awesome. Take care. Dana Brown, general manager, Houston Astros, Blue Jays special assistant to the GM. He was with the Montreal Expos as well. Some numbers. This is
the Houston Astros, Buck and Dan talked a little bit about this on the telecast a couple of nights ago. Framber Valdez signed at the age of 21 for $10,000. Mm. Luis Garcia signed at the age of 19 for $20,000. Christian Javier, $64,000 at the age of 18. Jose Urquidy got $100,000, but he was signed out of playing. He was playing professional baseball in Mexico at the time. So we're talking about less than
$200,000,
just a little under $200,000.
That's crazy.
That's nuts.
That's what you have to do. Longevity.
That
right?
is nuts.
That's what it's about. Be good for long periods of time.
Yeah, and you know, and one of the reasons the Astros have been able to keep this group together for so long is because they've been getting that relatively cheap, cost-efficient pitching. Now, of course, it's getting to the point where I think Valdez might be a free agent. It's getting to a point where it's going to start to cost them. But, you know, it's the reason the Astros brought Dana Brown in last year is they knew their farm system was starting to be depleted.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, one of the things Dana did last year when they traded for Justin Verlander is they got rid of two of their top prospects. I mean, I think if you look at the minor league rankings for what they're worth, the Astros are now like 27th, 26th, 28th in some of the mm-hmm. rankings. But that's one of the things Dana Brown was bought in to do because he was a scout.
Yeah.
Is, you know, this major league roster should maintain itself for the next 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
Now you got to bring in that next wave.
Well, it makes sense too, right? If some of your guys get hurt, like Verlander, like McCullers Jr., like Garcia, Urquidy, you mentioned, mm-hmm. and then you have to fill in the blanks with JP France, Hunter Brown.
Yep.
That's why you go out and get an elite closer like Hader.
Bingo.
Sort of, you're getting, you know, the ninth inning, Presley in the eighth inning, and, you know, that Abreu's, I think, in the seventh inning, and he can rove like there. Yeah. I mean, it's just riches everywhere at the back end of the bullpen.
Yeah,
so that's what you do, right? You solidify it, make it easy for a beginning manager to sort of fill in the blanks when you have to when guys are not there because, you know, you have a really good offense. You know most of the time your defense is good. Baseball IQ is what it takes to win a bunch of games. They're showing you consistently they can do that. So it's just filling in the blanks. They are a really smart organization. Like when something's not right, they fix it quicker than most.
Yeah, I will tell you, there is no team in Major League Baseball right now with a bad record that I'm less concerned about than the Astros.
That's well said. I think so.
There
too.
Just isn't.
Yeah.
There isn't.
Yep.
7 years in a row at least going to the LCS.
Four out of the seven World Series. I mean, it speaks for itself.
Like that is a dynasty. The way the game is now, that's a dynasty.
And it's luck if you win it. But it's something else. Like, that's why people continue to pick them.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm with you, though, boy. They got to get Kyle Tucker locked up.
He would think so. He would probably be the first guy.
You know, if he and Yordan Alvarez
Altuve is going to be there forever.
If those three are kind of the focal point of your next wave, that's a third of your lineup.
Lefty hitters who can hit lefties and righties don't grow on trees. And if you got to pay them, you got
to
pay them.
And I'll tell you what, if you end up having to go into the free agent market, you can lure a right-handed hitter to Houston.
No question.
So the Crawford.
Well, they win all the time too, which doesn't hurt.
It doesn't. And it's Texas and your state income taxes. Which is
money.
It's back to that at some point. It gets back to money. Yes. A reminder that we're going to be doing something special on Friday following the Jays game. We're going to be doing Blue Jays Talk live on TV.
Nice.
So we're going to be using the back leg line for it. The numbers are 416. The number is 416-413-3959. That's a line we have where you can leave questions and comments for Kevin Barker. We'll be doing that. I'll send out a reminder on social media, and of course I'll mention it again tomorrow, but it'll be a lot of fun. It'll be a live Blue Jays talk on TV following the Jays Yankees game, and it's the home opener at Yankee for the Yankees, so I'm sure there'll be a lot to talk about. You know, my only concern right now is I've checked the Doppler, the radar, in case you haven't noticed there's a lot of rain in these
coast
right now.
Yeah.
John Schneider's manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. You think he's in a good mood this morning? He better be. We'll find out. He'll join us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Eight ten is the first pitch tonight.
I think it's 7.
What? Oh, don't confuse me, man. Don't say that. Anyhow, there's a first pitch tonight, third game of the series against the Astros. Don't do that. I scuffle.
I scuffle
with start times. Every game should start.
Oh no, it's 8:10.
Every game should start at 7.
It's 8:10.
Every game should start at 7.
I don't think the Astros care what you think.
You could do it if you didn't play the national anthem, which you don't need to play. Just start the games. Start the games. Anyhow, 8:10 is the first pitch tonight. The rubber match of the Jays Astros
winning edition series. Us after the game.
I think so. Winning edition of Blue Jays talk.
Bass is going to be good.
Yeah, I was.
I think he is.
I kind of.
Sinker command will be better. Getting to those splits, right? What do I throw this dude with two strikes to get him out? I think that'll be a little bit better.
And you know,
because of that command of the two-seamer.
He had a wobble at the start of last season, too, and then picked it up. I'm kind of with you.
A wobble.
You know, if they, well.
No, it was cutter command, same as it was last year.
What was your phrase earlier? The game got Western.
Yeah.
So he got a little Western. He had a little Western.
Don't throw the cutter down the middle. It's simple.
If that happens, the Jays will be 4-3.
How about it?
Going into Yankee Stadium. It might be in the cards.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
5-6-7 or 5-50. 5-50. George Springer's 3-22. Winning the next 3 out of 4. Yeah.
We'll see.
Challenges.
We're going to be joined in a few minutes by the manager, John Schneider, ahead of tonight's game. Chris Bassett against Christian Javier. The Jays winning 2-1 over the Houston Astros somehow last night. I was sitting there thinking, how the hell did they win that game? And then I thought, actually, the question I should be asking is, how the hell did the Astros lose that game?
Yeah, don't throw a slider down the middle. Don't get picked off third.
Yeah.
Simple.
After being no-hit the night before and being shut out for 8 innings, Davis Schneider playing the hero.
He playing today, you think?
I mean.
A righty throwing. Throw the ball up. We need to ask John.
We'll ask John. Do you know that Bruce Bochy used to have a thing that if you hit a home run, you played the next day.
John's got the same thing.
Didn't matter lefty or righty. It didn't matter who was starting.
But Davis don't like the elevated fastball. His words, not mine.
Anyhow.
We'll see.
You can tell, by the way, the camera shots after that home run, both the Jays dugout and Josh Hader's reaction. You could tell that was a dramatic moment.
Absolutely.
Bring in John Schneider. He is manager of the Toronto Blue Jays. There he is.
Wow.
Looking like a guy who won a game 2-1 last night.
He got a haircut too. It looks like
he got a haircut.
He
too.
Did.
It's
all right. Hey, the easy question, softball question, but after being no hit, how good is it to win a dramatic game?
Yeah, I mean, it's huge, you know, no hit, you know, you hate having that happen. And, you know, it was tough sledding against Framber too. You know, he was dealing, his ball was moving all over the place. A lot of ground balls. It could have been easy to just say, okay, this is going to be a tough 2 games. And the guys kept going at it. You know, huge swing from Schneid, obviously, big walk from JT to get to that point. But it is nice to kind of turn the page.
How nice is it to watch Barrios self-correct and make an adjustment in game? Glove side, John, wasn't very good, right? I mean, that's where he's sort of, when he's really good and filthy, it's doing things glove side. And not having whiffs on the slurve glove side is a big thing. And then he self-corrects and adjusts that and starts throwing more arm side. I don't think last year or maybe last year he could have done that. Year after, you know, probably not. This year, it just seems like it clicks. I don't think about it. I attack because something else not working. How nice is it to watch that?
Yeah, he's really in a good spot, you know, when it comes to understanding what he's doing and who he is. You hit the nail on the head, Kev. He was trying to get the ball away to those righties. You know, obviously left one up to Altuve. and just made an adjustment. You know, sinker was working, but it wasn't going where he wanted it. So he made the adjustment, got it in on those righties, you know, worked the breaking ball off that. His changeup was good too, but he's, you know, to watch him kind of evolve, you know, the past year or so, like you mentioned, going back to 2022 to now, he's a really confident guy right now. It's a nice thing to have.
Yeah.
What do you think explains, it's got to be something more than just confidence though, isn't it? With Jose Berríos, the fact that, you know, like Kevin and I talked about this, comparing even last spring, comparing where he was last spring to this spring, there's got to be something more than just confidence, isn't it?
Yeah, I think, having success, you know, you're going to be confident in what you're doing. His delivery is in a really good spot, too. I think he was searching a little bit, you know, going back to 22, but even to start the year or to start camp last year, kind of searching for it, and it's just landed in a really good spot. So his stuff speaks for itself, and he's, you know, he knows that. And I think when you're hitting and you're messing with your mechanics, you know, it's tough to go compete. And I think with Hosey, his mechanics are in a good spot. He just goes out and does his thing.
Speaking of confidence, Jimmy Garcia last night with the two pop-outs and a punch-out, how confident are you bringing him into those spots? I don't think you would have been that maybe last year. I know end of last year it was up and down. Velocity was a little moody. Secondary pitches, he may abuse those instead of throwing fastballs. It's just he, speaking of confidence, like that's it, right? And then off season, I think he got a little stronger. Maintaining that velocity is a big deal. How much confidence you got in him?
Yeah, a lot. I mean, he's been quietly really, really good since he's been here. You look at the first half of last year and it kind of took him a while to get going. But his stuff has always been there, you know. And I think right now without Jordy and without Swanee, you know, we're asking him and Chad to do, you know, the heavy lifting at the back end and bringing him into big spots. And he's not scared of any situation, which is what I love about him. You know exactly who you're getting when he comes in. And, you know, he's going to have to hold the fort down for a little bit until those other guys get back. But yeah, man, have all the confidence in the world in him right now. And his stuff is in a great spot.
John, I mean, we know that Romano, Swanson, Manoah are working their way back. What are the chances we see the two relievers or one of the two relievers here in time for Monday's home opener? And what are the chances we might see Alec during this homestand? Or am I getting really ahead of myself there?
Maybe a little bit ahead of yourself with Alec. I think with Jordy and Swanee, they're making really good progress. And, you know, they may arrive a little bit quicker, assuming everything goes well. And, you know, you got to kind of take it day to day. You know, Romano's bullpen yesterday was really encouraging, as was Swanee's the day before. So you got to listen to them. You got to, you know, trust that what they're saying is true, and then watch your stuff. So I don't think they're going to need too much time once they do hit real games in the minor leagues. And you know, hopefully it is when we are home.
John, the six errors in six games, are you worried about that?
No, I mean these guys. I mean, you know, just looking at, I mean, yesterday's a catcher's interference. There's been some things that, you know, kind of, you know, a little bit careless. But no, man, these guys work. They work so hard at their defense, and I think that's what we pride ourselves in. And, you know, those things are going to happen. I think a couple happened in one game, you know what I mean? But, I mean, the work they do every day, not worried about that. And, you know, early in the season, you see some things that you're probably not going to see over the course of the year as it unfolds on any side of the ball. So, you know, not worried about that at all.
John, you know, guys like Justin Turner. I mean, Justin Turner's pretty much come as advertised.
Yep.
You know, I think people see where Vladdy is. They like where he is. I've got to ask you, I know Kevin brought this up. You know, guys like Kirk, Kiermaier, Varsho, again, it's a small sample size, but they're 5-for-50 combined with 16 strikeouts. I know people watching the game last night, I'm sitting there thinking a couple of times, okay, put the hit and run on now because nothing's happening at the bottom of the order. You know, all the stuff people say, you got traffic on the bases, yada, yada, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to ask you how concerned you are with where that aspect of the game is right now, but do we sometimes just assume that putting on a play, do we just assume that it's easier than it really is, right?
Sometimes, yeah. I like kind of forced action when things aren't going on. You know, I thought Kev was going to take a bump with him in his first AB with a runner at first. You know, and those are the discussions that we've had, veteran guys that kind of understand where they are in the order, where they are with their swing. you know, the hit and run. We put a hit and run on with Servin the other day when he was catching. Mm-hmm. You know, there's times to do it. You can't kind of just throw stuff out there just because, you know, you don't have a hit in a couple innings. There's got to be a rhyme and a reason to it. But absolutely, it's probably easier to say do this or do that, whether to steal a base or not, all that kind of stuff. But you also have to realize it's six games in, and these guys have been doing it for a while. So you don't want to force things. You know, there's certain guys that we're going to do it with, and I think everyone in the league knows who that is. And when the time is right, you go for it. But again, six games in, and these guys are still kind of getting their footing a little bit, and you don't want to do anything that's overly crazy at this point.
Yeah, John, Varsho is 2 for 17 with 6 Ks. Kiermaier is 1 for 15 with 6 Ks. You know, again, this is early in the season. They got, 15 at-bats and 17 at-bats. One good game will just sort of correct all that stuff, right, and make those stats look that much better. Do you see anything that will tell you mechanic-wise or, you know, demeanor? A lot of that this time of the year, right, is how you're standing on the on-deck circle, confidence, those kind of things. Anything you're seeing that will tell you that those two guys are one game away from being sort of what you want them to be?
Yeah, I think anyone, you could say that about anyone at this point in the year, right? I mean, 15 and 17 ABs, really, really small sample size. We see the work that they do. You know, it comes down to what pitches you're swinging at, you know? If KK's swinging at good pitches, he's pretty damn good. If Arch is swinging at good pitches like he did the entire spring training, he's pretty damn good. And I think with that, you look at the results, okay, they are what they are. But pleased with the pitches that they're swinging at. You know, Kev yesterday with the cutter to Framber, you know, it's tough. You know, there's been some tough pitching for sure. Mm-hmm. But the fact that Varsh is laying off pitches at the top of the zone is encouraging. And I think, you know, over time, the pitches that he is offering at, he's going to connect with both of them.
John, I know that there was a play in the game last night. We actually didn't get to see the whole thing, but there was a play last night. I think Kyle Tucker went to second base on a pop foul that Alejandro Kirk caught the foul, but Tucker advanced to second on it. You talked about the catcher's interference. You know, we were watching the game. I almost got the sense that the Astros thought they might have had a little something in Kirky the way they were pushing the envelope in the base pass. Now, it didn't work out. But, you know, one of the talking points going into the year, obviously, was no Jano. Alejandro Kirk's going to have to really shoulder a pretty heavy burden. Any concern at all on your part that when we see things like that, it might come from workload? Or is that just, are we just picking at things?
No, I think you're picking at it, really. I mean, you look at what Kirky does between, you know, his receiving numbers, the balls in the dirt he keeps in front of him. Catcher's interference is going to happen with Kyle Tucker, for one, with the way his bat is, with the way his swing goes to the zone. That play was weird to pop up. You know, I think everyone kind of assumes time is going to be called, and Chad Fairchild did actually give it, but Tucker was halfway to second. So that was kind of a weird play, something that doesn't really happen. What I was excited about was, you know, Altuve trying to steal home there with two outs and two strikes in the eighth and trying to catch Kirky napping. And Kirky being all over that, really. And then the throw in the ninth inning, although the, you know, Myers falls down, probably Kirky's best throw of the year. So not worried about that at all. I think those are just a couple weird plays that have happened in the first week. But no, Kirky's in a good spot. I think he's so right here. He's not much excites that dude or gets him rattled. So I think that could be, you know, seen as a negative sometimes. You know, but he's in a good spot right now.
John, we talked about Barrios self-correcting, making in-game adjustments. Whenever I watch the lineup, now correct me if I'm wrong. So, you know, he's talking about picking. Like, you know, I think the lineup's good. It can be really good, right? The length of this thing, if certain guys step up, can be really good. Me and you've had this conversation.
You guys loved us. You loved us after opening day.
Absolutely. Well, who wouldn't? Absolutely, absolutely. But I'm saying
runs will do that, man. Well, yeah, I'll love 9 runs or eight runs any day.
Absolutely. But then you run into somebody like Blanco that you've never faced before that would show you something that it looked to me like, anyway, that you guys were just not prepared for, right? The changeup. He just had it going, right? You guys had a decent game plan going in, and it's the self-correcting end game. It just seems like, for whatever reason, 1 through 9 just don't want to buy into that. Either I don't want to say they can't, because that's a strong word. But, you know, it just seems like they sort of have their game plan, and no matter what that pitcher's doing to us, we're going to stick with that game plan. Am I overthinking that, or is this the thing you guys have been talking about sort of try and self-correct and adjust a little quicker that would help us score more runs?
Kev, good question. You've been in the dugout. I mean, for Juan Blanco, not a lot of starts, right? Eighth start in his career. Basically tripled his changeup usage in his first outing. You know, it was up in spring training for him, albeit small sample size, but basically tripled his changeup usage in that game against us. Now, do you have to adjust to it? Yeah, sure. Were we talking about it in the dugout? Were they talking about it with Donnie? Yeah, sure. I mean, then you start sitting on it, and he's taking that thing from strike to ball pretty well. And he was living on the outside edge with his slider. I mean, I thought our game plan, you know, going into it, you feel comfortable with it, and then you get no hit, and you go, okay, what were we doing? Part of it is he was locating well. Part of it is we probably could have sat, you know, soft a little bit more instead of fastballs. But the in-game adjustment, yeah, that's what every team is trying to do. And that's what every hitting coach and every player is talking about, you know, every single inning. When they're sitting there looking at iPads, they're not checking out their swing. They're looking at pitches. They're doing their homework. So we were definitely prepared, you know, and then the next step is you got to make adjustments as you go. And sometimes that's hard to do with a guy you're not familiar with, but pitchers change all the time. Pitchers have new pitches. Pitchers use their stuff differently. They up or down or decrease their usage year to year. And he had it going that night. But we're going to see the same thing with Javier tonight, I think. You know, so it's going to be interesting to see how he attacks us based off of Blanco's game.
Yeah.
And you got to be ready to pivot. You know what I mean? I think one of the things we're most excited about this year is having, you know, voices, not only players, but Donnie and Hunter and G and Matt Haig, being on top of that, you know what I mean? And helping the guys adjust when you need to. So, again, it's good pitching we faced early. And, you know, by no means do we think that these guys are going to be stubborn enough and say, this is my plan and I'm not going to budge no matter what. These guys are good and these guys are going to adjust.
You know, John, sometimes some people would say, and I'm in this camp, I would say this too, why not move around the batter's box? It's a simple approach, right? It's a simple game plan. If I'm right-handed, and that's sort of the way they attack the first four or five guys in your lineup, is the slider away, right? It's take the sting sure. out of the bat. They're hearing and they're listening to the same thing that you guys are preaching. Only swing at what you can do damage on, okay? Well, you saw that first game against the Rays, right? It was quadrants. And then after that, it was everything away. Take the sting out of the bat. Sort of help me understand why guys nowadays don't want to move around the batter's box. Me and you did when we played because we had to. We stunk offensively. It was giving us a chance, right? That's what you do. That's the frustrating part that I don't understand is why let the dude do the same thing over and over again? Catch it before it breaks is the old saying. I just wonder why that is. That's a simple thing that we just don't see a lot of.
Yeah. Well, you know what's funny is guys on our team do that. You know what I mean? It may not be noticeable on the broadcast. But you know, just to name a couple, like Barsh did that in Tampa with some righties throwing those cutters in. You know, there's some guys that do it that may not be noticeable. Now within that, I mean, here's the thing. You're so accustomed to hitting in a spot in the box and you're so accustomed to being comfortable in a certain spot.
Yeah.
You could say one of two things. You could say he's pitching me away, so I'm going to stand on top of the plate and make that thing middle. Or you can say, I'm going to stick with my approach, not budget that thing until this dude does make a mistake and come into the zone that I can hit it. So, I mean, it's give or take, you know what I mean? But guys do move around, and it's something that we talk about. And again, it's not an easy thing to do.
No.
Right. It's like telling some, you know, it's, hey, do something drastically different than what you're already really good at and go have immediate results. Hard to do. That's what we talk about, getting guys in certain areas. And some nights, man, the pitchers are going to beat you.
Yeah.
You know, they're going to have their stuff and they're going to beat you. And that's all right. You know what I mean? You don't want it to be an everyday occurrence, but you don't want dudes to do something that they're not comfortable with.
Good answer.
Last question for us, John. We had Ryan Dempster on yesterday and we were talking about guys utilizing new pitches or pitches they were working on in spring training. We're talking about Blanco, and you mentioned it tripled up on his changeup usage. Philosophically, how do you like to see a pitcher take a new pitch or, you know, whatever? And we've talked about the cutter with Berríos and the split-fingered pitch with Pearson. Take it from the bullpen in spring training into a game. What is your philosophy about that?
Well, for one, I mean, bullpen and spring training, you're working on the actual shape of it, the actual, you know, what is it going to do? How is it going to move? And then from there in the season, you're just pairing it up with your stuff. You know, guys that we have, you know, they got a pretty, you know, well-traveled career or background, and guys know how they're going to be attacked. So I think it's understanding what that pitch is going to do, and then how is it going to help me navigate in a bat or put a guy away with my other stuff, really. You don't want to fall in love with things. You don't want to get, you don't want to, you know, we don't want Kevin Gausman throwing 20 sliders a game. You know what I mean? We don't want Jose throwing 30 cutters a game because the other stuff is so good. So it's really having an understanding of what it does and then how is it going to help you navigate in a bat or a lineup, and you know, as the season goes.
John, we are going to let you run. You've been gracious with your time as always. Thanks for this.
Thanks, buddy.
Go get him tonight.
Good luck.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks, guys. Good catching up with you.
See you soon. Thanks, buddy.
John Schneider, manager of the Blue Jays. And again, 8:10 is the first pitch tonight. Lots of good answers.
Yeah.
Which is par for the course for John Schneider. You know, we talked about the hit and run and creating, putting traffic and all that, and pressing the issue. And I like John's line about, you know, you kind of got to let guys. It's six games into the season.
Yeah,
guys aren't up to speed yet necessarily.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So this gets back to your point. You know,
do I feel confident in giving that sign? And, you know, sort of messing it up for the guys that are following
him. And maybe different in May. It's something, look, I put my hand up. It's something I think, again, we always say don't overreact. But there's also things, we always fall back on when a team is scuffling. And one of them is, why don't you create something in the basement?
Yeah.
We just do.
Yeah.
Everybody does that. And sometimes you got to remember. You know, as Brian Burke used to say, when talking about decisions that general managers and organizations make, here's what you got to assume. You got to assume, regardless of what you may think of the person, they're smart because they got that job.
Yep.
You assume they know a whole hell of a lot more than you and the media or the fans do.
Absolutely.
About the player's health. Yep. And you assume good intentions because, again, regardless of what you think of a person, I'm pretty certain that John Schneider doesn't go to the ballpark and go, man, how can I screw this up today?
Yeah.
And it's just, I know it's a very, that makes for boring talk radio.
It does.
It's much better to come on and, you know, like that and light everybody up.
Yeah, yeah.
But sometimes I think you do need to keep that in mind. And Barker, I want you to, whenever I fail to do that, I want you to be the person to keep me in line.
Look, again, I think John has to have confidence when he puts that sign on that they can execute that. If he doesn't feel that way, what's the point? He's saying the first four guys in the order for a reason. Like, again, they could be in scoring position standing at first just as well as they can standing at second, especially at the short porch and left. And you're trying to bring Springer up with somebody on base. Doesn't matter where they're standing as long as they're on base because he can change the game that way. Mm. And you just sort of don't want to screw that up by when guys are struggling at the bottom of the order. That's why they're at the bottom of the order for the guys at the top of the order. I know people that hate John don't want to hear that because they want to throw a grenade in there at every little thing he doesn't do because they think he should be doing it. Sometimes I think you got to take a step back.
Yep.
And just understand, you know, he's trying to get everybody sort of heading in the right direction and get their right feel of that part of the game, and hopefully you can see the best out of them. So, you know, right now it's pitching and defense. Offensively, they ain't giving you a ton. Like, it's going to take the right guy up at the right time. And we know who the right guys are, and that's sort of the way John's trying to work around it and put the right plays on. And you know, hopefully they can keep it close and hopefully have the big inning, which is what they're trying to do.
Yeah, that is very much what the plan is. And good news, I would think, from John Schneider as well. Now, it appears as if Alek Manoah might be a little optimistic expecting him to be up here during the homestand.
I was told he's close. Is
but
what I was
it
told.
Certainly does seem as if Jordan Romano and Eric Swanson, you know, knock on wood, providing there's no setback when they get into a an actual game in extended spring or in minor league games, whatever it is, mm-hmm. it certainly does seem as if there's a chance that maybe both of them will be up here for the home opener.
Yeah, Romano, maybe. Swanson. I mean, their bullpen's just longer. And John could use Jimmy Garcia earlier, sixth inning. Yeah. Like, feel comfortable that he could be the Swiss Army knife.
He could be the Jordan Hicks.
Maneuver
Jordan
around.
Hicks was last year.
Late in the year. With more strikeouts. Like, I think that's why they brought him in yesterday. And Buck Martinez did a really good job of explaining that. Like, you know, you bring him in when you need a punch out. Like, you need a weak contact. Like, he's got the breaking stuff to do it. If you want to punch out, he's got enough velocity on the heater to go middle of the way after he set it up with a couple of breaking balls and, you know, get you cheating because of all those things. So, yeah, just by the way, John, I told you this. That's what I took away from spring training. These games matter. Like, I know he's trying to get everybody's feet wet and, you know, trying to make sure that Varsho is moving around the batter's box. I found it funny that he mentioned that and made sure he wanted to tell everybody that Varsho was one of the guys. And I got to be honest.
You haven't seen it.
No, I have not. Now, I'm sure it's very minor, and that's sort of what you want anyway. It's not a giant move. It's just it's enough to change the point of contact. That's all it is. That now I can square it up a little bit easier if I move one way or the other. It makes a ton of sense. Like, you don't have to do a ton, but it is a big move. I know it sounds silly to most who've never stood in a box.
But it makes sense. No, it makes sense. Catch it before it breaks.
Angles.
It makes sense.
Everything is about angles in a batter's box. And you know, it's almost like when you move, something internally is telling you to start it quicker.
Yep.
I got to go quicker now because I'm closer. And when you're quicker and not on time, everything else is thrown off, and then you're either late, you're early, and then you're not squaring things up, and you're more thinking about the early part and the quicker part than you are just, I've moved. If I just get that one and I catch it right, it's going to go where I want it to go. For me, they have to. They're not good enough physically, mentally, mechanically, to just stand in the same spot, let that dude do the same thing over and over again. Move around a little bit, make it tougher on him. If you do that, sooner or later, the dude's going to throw something to you that you can hit hard, and that's what you want to do.
Jeff Passan is ESPN's MLB insider. A little bit of news out of Kansas City yesterday, which is where Jeff is based. The Kansas City Royals and the Kansas City Chiefs saw a proposal. It was election day in the United States yesterday in some areas. Saw a proposal for a tax increase to help fund a stadium. Mm. Shot down. Badly,
wow!
By voters,
yeah.
Shot down badly by voters. So this, of course, has led to suggestions that the Royals and Chiefs, whose stadiums are side by side, may end up looking in another county. Mm-hmm. I'm not buying that for a second. I think when push comes to shove, they'll both probably be in that area. But we'll talk to Jeff Passan about it because I think a lot of people just assumed that it was a measure that was probably going to pass. Jeff Passan joins us next. It's Blair and Barker on Sportsnet 590 The Fan and Sportsnet.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
We trade technical directors.
I think we can.
Brandeo's been
on point.
Yeah, I was going to say he's been on edge. He's been on point.
He's been right.
That's
there.
A good way to put it.
Yeah. He's been right there.
Hey, just wave the white flag. Yeah. Welcome back to Blair and Barker, where we will endeavor to be better. we will endeavor to be better in the final 30 minutes than we were in the first 90, according to our technical director.
I thought John was good.
Yeah. I thought he was too. I mean, he answered all the questions.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to be watching Dalton Varsho every at-bat for the next week to make sure that he is moving up. Third game of the Astros series goes tonight. 8:10 is the first pitch. Tomorrow's an off day for the Blue Jays. We'll still be on from 2 to 4. And then a reminder, on Friday, the Jays will be the opponents for the Yankees in their home opener at Yankee Stadium. That's an afternoon game, and we will be on following the game with Blue Jays Talk. That will be live, and we will be taking viewer /listener calls using the back leg line. The number is 416-413-3959. We'll probably also open the text line as well to get some texts, even though I like to take phone calls as opposed to texts.
Yeah, me too.
The hell's the point of having a call-in show?
Not any point. Just,
but anyhow, so that'll be Friday after the game. So you'll have a chance to abuse Kevin and myself on national TV. A
few minutes.
And again, every Friday we will be going to the back leg line to solicit viewer questions, comments, recipes, jokes, things of that nature. I got to admit that I generally, whenever there's a vote for stadium funding and it fails, I generally don't fall into the category of the future of a franchise in a particular market has been thrown into jeopardy, ..
Because
quite often, unless it's Oakland, quite often stuff works out. Last night, and I'm reading a Wire story, the future of the Royals and Chiefs in Kansas City was thrown into question on Thursday night when residents of Jackson County, Missouri, voted down a sales tax measure that would have helped fund a new downtown ballpark along with significant renovations in Arrowhead Stadium. Now, this vote not only failed, it was blowing out of the water. More than 58% of voters ultimately rejected the plan. Let's bring in Jeff Passan, ESPN MLB insider, and a resident of that fine area. Were you a Jackson County voter, or are you a Jackson County voter?
I'm not. I'm on the Kansas side of state line. I'm about 2 miles away from being a Jackson County voter. But no, I am with the other people of fine Johnson County, Kansas.
All right. So is this, I get the impression this wasn't necessarily a surprise to ownership. Does it matter when a vote fails, a vote like this fails, whether it's narrow or overwhelming? Like, does that change the equation at all?
I think it does, actually. And I think it's the sort of thing that was a reality check for the Royals that, you know, they understood over the last month the way that this was trending. We have to, in order to really contextualize this, look at the entire rollout of this thing. It was kind of haphazard because, you know, at one point they were asking for a stadium at one site and then considering it at another site. And then they spring a third site, and that third site happens to be in the middle of the Crossroads District, which is like a very cool art community in Kansas City and kind of runs antithetical to big business coming in and creating this mega mall, which is essentially what new stadiums are these days, like a baseball field in the middle of a mall. That's what you have in Atlanta at the Battery, and that's what all the other teams out there that want to build new stadiums are aspiring to have. And so not only did it run against the principles of the people who live there and who over the past 20 years have turned the Crossroads from, you know, dead-end neighborhood into something that's thriving and fun. You can go out and eat, you can shop, like it's a good place to be, but they were doing this against the backdrop of, oh yeah, this city that has failing schools all over the place is also going to essentially be giving a billionaire hundreds of millions of dollars. That doesn't go well these days when we know a lot more about the economics of public funding of stadiums. And when, you know, desperation or threats or cajoling or any of the things that organizations used to do successfully in the past don't quite have the sway and the pull that they used to. So I think it's not that Jackson County voters, Jeff, were against the idea of a downtown stadium. I think people do like it. They were just against the way that this whole plan was unveiled and sold. And so where I think this goes is not to the whole, if this doesn't pass, then there is no plan B, which was a stupid thing to say by the people trying to get this passed. I think it goes to, okay, let's have a real discussion about this, about what's best, not just for the Royals, but for the community as well.
Yeah, and just so I'm, you know, I am clear on this, I hope. Basically, the plan was to replace an existing sales tax with a similar tax, correct? Is that
correct? The sales tax that's in place right now is 0.375%, or 0.375%, rather. And they wanted to wipe that off the books and just put a new one on at the same price for the next 40 years as opposed to, you know, a far shorter period of time when this is going to run out.
And I presume the Royals want to relocate, the Chiefs want to stay where they are and refurbish Arrowhead, because I mean, the location works for an NFL team, does it not? There's lots of parking.
Correct.
Right. And yeah. Whereas
the location's great for an NFL team because, like you said, there's tons of parking and tailgating is a huge part of the culture here. Mm-hmm. And so you need somewhere that has big parking lots. And if that's not in Jackson County with the Chiefs, then they will find a very soft landing somewhere in Johnson County. I'm sure either here or in Wyandotte County, a little bit further north, they would gladly bring the Chiefs and Patrick Mahomes to the area.
Does this change what the Orioles organization does? The Royals. What did I say? Orioles?
Orioles.
Close. Yeah. Orioles are good, too. If I say the Royals are not real good, if I'm a voter, why would I want to pay a tax for a bad team to move? I can go watch a really bad team and a really nice team. That doesn't make any sense. Would that change what the organization will do going forward? It looks like they're trying to get better. No, not lose 100 games this year or next year.
Yeah, at the time when they signed Bobby Witt Jr. to the contract extension, I said essentially this is a $288 million down payment on, you know, a billion-dollar stadium, because at that point, the no vote on the continuation of the sales tax, it didn't have a whole lot of backing. It was sort of assumed that yes was going to win and that the downtown stadium was, if not a fait accompli, then very likely. Now, yeah, this does change their calculus, and I think they need to spend more time, frankly, going around and shaking hands and kissing babies and getting the politicians on their side. Because to me, like, the most damning thing here was the mayor of Kansas City, Quentin Lucas, didn't back the stadium until 3 days before the election. Mm-hmm. And politically, I can understand why, because it had become a very divisive issue, and getting out in front of that, if you're signing on early to something that ultimately fails, like jumping in late, there's not a whole lot of risk there. He could just say, I was trying to be supportive of what I think Jackson County should have, which is the Kansas City Royals in their county confines. But if you get on board early and it's a slaughter like that, that is politically an ugly thing on your resume.
Shifting focus to a wider baseball picture, what's more real, the Detroit Tigers or the New York Mets?
Oh,
I think they're both real.
Okay.
I think the Mets aren't as bad as they've been. I think the Tigers aren't as good as they've been. But I did pick the Tigers, Jeff, to win the American League Central this year.
Okay.
So I suppose that I'm not entirely surprised by their start. And, I'm really bullish on their pitching. I had Tarik Skubal winning the American League Cy Young this year, and he looked damn good in his first start. I got Reese Olson for $1 in my fantasy draft and laughed at all my idiot friends who didn't pick him. He looked pretty good in his first start.
He's right.
So,
yeah.
So, and beyond just the two of them, Jack Flaherty looked really good. Kenta Maeda is a rotation stabilizer for a rotation that has had a lot of instability in recent years. Casey Mize, the former number one overall draft pick, it's to the point where, like, Matt Manning, a guy who's been in the big leagues for a few years now, starting off at AAA, and he's joined there by Jackson Jobe, who may not be Paul Skeens, but he is really close, and he is unquestionably one of the two best pitching prospects in baseball and right on the cusp of the big leagues at this point. And when you add in a core that includes Riley Green and Kerry Carpenter, Cole Keith at second base, Spencer Torkelson at first. Jace Jung is going to be coming up at some point. Parker Meadows, I think, has a chance to be a good center fielder. Like, they got some pieces there, man. And I'm not sure that they're going to win the division this year, even though I picked them. But I do think in the coming years, they might be the most dangerous team in the Central.
Yeah, staying in the Central, you think the Twins can hit enough homers to either make the playoffs or win the Central?
Well, they did last year, right?
Yeah.
Like, that was more or less the entirety of their offense. This is not a station-to-station team. This is a team that hits the ball over the fence and rode really good pitching. And Sonny Gray's not there anymore. It's a lot on Pablo Lopez's shoulders. It's a lot on Joe Ryan, who really looked good in his first start. And it was against the Royals, but, you know, the stuff and the variety of stuff, especially. He was a guy who came up and was throwing fastballs like 80% of the time. But he's added some new pitches to the repertoire and looks great. Bailey Ober, on the other hand, did not look very good in his first start. And Johan Duran is on the injured list right now. And I think the Twins, if they're in any other division, are probably in the middle of the pack team. But American League Central, baby, like, it's a different place. And it's a lot easier to win this division with 85 wins than it would be anywhere else.
What should I think of the Pirates? 5-0, Jeff.
Does it matter? 5-0.
Does it matter?
I did a piece leading in, I think it was the day before opening day, on how one of the defining features of this 2024 season is going to be the fact that only four teams, the Oakland A's, the Washington Nationals, the Colorado Rockies, and a fourth team that I wish I was thinking of in this moment, but cannot come to my head right now. There are four teams that are going to not have any shot at being in the playoffs this year, but there are 26 teams that have genuine, legitimate playoff shots. And I was like, you know, the Pirates have a genuine, legitimate playoff shot? Probably not. Let's remember, last year they got off to a really hot start too. But the difference this year, they've got Jared Jones up from their organization throwing 100 and punching out 10 in his big league debut. They've got Skeens on the way. I don't think their lineup is going to be good enough, but I think their pitching with the two of them, Skeens and Jones, as well as Mitch Keller, is going to be a lot better than people gave him credit for. And I think they can hang around, if not win that division.
Jeff, the Astros are very much in focus for us right now because the Blue Jays are playing them. Where do you see Alex Bregman and Kyle Tucker? Where do you see how do you see those situations resolving themselves?
Well, I mean, Kyle Tucker's got another year after this before he hits free agency, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's time to get an extension done there. Bregman's a tough one. You know, he's going to be, I believe, 31.
Yep.
By the time next year rolls around. And he's a guy who after the MVP type season back in 2019, he hasn't been quite the same. Like, you know, the revelation of the cheating comes around in 2020, I really don't look at anyone's numbers from that year and think they're particularly representative. But since then, he hasn't slugged much over 450 in any of his individual seasons. And, you know, he's going to want superstar money. And I understand that because that's what he's been. But I would caution that he not fall into the same trap of overestimating who he is, or even more than that, what teams think of him. Because I don't know that a third baseman, even though he's got incredible bat-to-ball skill and his swing decisions are right up there with you know, the elite guys, top 5% in baseball. An aging corner guy who doesn't have top-end power is not somebody who goes out and gets $250+ million.
Right.
So I think the Astros are going to, and understandably so, drive a hard bargain here, because frankly, they got a lot of money on the books going forward, guys. Like, just think about who they have under long-term contract. Jose Altuve, it's $33 million a year for 3 years after this season. Josh Hader at $19 million a year. Jordan Alvarez's contract bumps up to $15.8 next year, and then $27 a year after that.
Mm.
You know, they've got Christian Javier, who's going to be in the $20+ million range by 2026. They've still got Lance McCullers for a couple of years after this year at 18 or so. So, you know, there aren't a lot of teams with nine figures on the books through 2027. That's where the Astros are. So they need to be very judicious about how they spend their money, especially if they're planning on re-signing Tucker, who's going to be a $30+ million a year player.
Yeah, he'd look good in a Jays uniform playing right. I'm just saying. I mean, if you're going to throw your money into a left-handed hitter, which they don't have, that'd be nice. Here's a baseball question, Jeff. After watching the last couple of games, and I can't still believe I'm asking this question, should I be surprised anymore about how bad the base running is at the big league level? It's not bad. It's atrocious. There's so many smart people running baseball. Why have they not fixed that part of baseball to make it an easier watch? Baseball IQ used to be, when I played, a thing. That would keep you in the big leagues. That would, you'd get paid for that. Anymore, it's okay to get picked off third with two outs and the middle of the order coming up. Should I be shocked anymore?
No, and here's why. This is a function of what baseball players are taught when they're teenagers. This is a function of what the priorities are for really good young baseball players. If you're a hitter, it's hitting the ball really freaking hard, and that's what matters. And if you're a pitcher, it's throwing the ball really freaking hard, and that's what matters. And it's interesting for me to see my child. He's 16 years old. He's a sophomore in high school. And his coach is proudly, vociferously old school. Like, that is, that's what they call this team on a high school level. He says, we are old school baseball. And the amount of time that they spend running the bases, I imagine, is, 99.9th percentile among high school teams, because that's just not something that's emphasized all that much anymore. And so you have players who don't have quite the feel that players of old did. And you can argue that the priority is being placed, Kevin, in the right place right now, because for all of the dumb things that you can do on the bases, and as much as it can kill a rally, isn't it better to have guys who can hit the ball really well? I think the answer is, of course, yes. Now, the retort to that is the two aren't mutually exclusive, you idiot, Jeff. And that is correct. You can be a really good hitter, and you can be a really sound base runner. But that, to me, is on youth coaching as much as anything.
Yeah, there's no money in it either. I don't get paid to run the bases. I get paid to throw hard and launch angle. That's me to run the bases. I'll run them better. But it's just a shame. It's a hard watch sometimes, that really good players with a lot of baseball IQ run like little leaguers. Run till you get tagged out. It's funny. That's all.
Or Kevin, can I turn it on its head a little bit?
Sure.
Is it not also a sign that there are really smart players on the other side defensively who notice the bad base running and take advantage of it, and that the defensive play in baseball now is as good as it's ever been, and maybe it's as much a function of the defense being on its toes as it is the base running being poor?
That's a good answer.
No, it is.
Yeah, that's a good
answer. And that's an area where analytics is making, has had an impact. As D-Wed Joe Maddon on talking about that, analytics very useful in defense, defense, and that's entirely possible.
Yeah.
Thank you for this, Jeff.
You're the best, buddy. Thanks.
Boys, pleasure's always mine. Have a great week.
Take care, Jeff Passan, MLB Insider with ESPN. I always tell the story about Marquise Grissom losing his arbitration hearing.
Yeah.
First time, because I grew up watching baseball, everybody was stealing bases in the 70s and 80s, right, when I was watching it. Remember Marquise Grissom showing up at spring training, lost his arbitration hearing, and we're gathered around his locker. And, how'd it go? And he said, I'm just not ever going to steal another base. Now, he didn't do that.
Yeah.
But it's the first time I remember somebody, a player, looking at me and saying, I was just told that I don't get paid
if
for stealing bases.
If you watch last night's Astros game and you're a casual fan and you watch Jose Altuve run the bases, there's no way you're going away from that thinking, that's a first ballot Hall of Famer. Not a chance.
I still think they'll maybe. You
not a chance.
I think they think they had something on Kirky.
And they were going to push the envelope. It didn't work.
Good luck, Dylan Hall.
Sometimes you got to lick the envelope shut instead of pushing it.
You know? Way to end the show, Jeff.
Boy, there's a deep thought for the day, isn't it? That's it for us. We'll have more deep thoughts following the game on Blue Jays Talk, and even deeper thoughts tomorrow when we're back from 2 to 4 Eastern. Enjoy the baseball.